Our study is in Genesis chapter 31. Genesis chapter 31. We're making our way through the book of Genesis. We've been looking at the lives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We're now in the life of Jacob and learning what Jacob's life is all about. Don't we love Jacob? We love Jacob. You're Jacob as much. It's very cool. We love Jacob. We're at this point where Jacob's going to have to be making some decisions. He's facing a crossroads in his life. He's going to have to be making decisions. I don't know about you, but I hate making decisions. I don't like to make decisions. I would rather somebody else make decisions. Who was it? Somebody, we were going out to, I think Dave and I were going out to lunch a couple months ago, and we just couldn't, we were not on our normal route to eat lunch, and none of us could. Well, I don't know, where do you want to go? Well, I don't know, where do you want to go? Well, I don't know, where do you want to go? So nobody wanted to make a decision. We just had the hardest time. I'd rather let somebody else make a decision. Remember, there was an old commercial, I think it was a mayonnaise commercial or something, that was on, you know, just decisions. Do I do white or wheat? Do I do butter or mayonnaise? Do I do ham or, remember that commercial? You know, do I butter this side or that side? You know, just life is so hard making decisions. Hard to know what to do, where you're going. Billy Graham tells of a time early in his career when he arrived at a small town to preach a sermon. Going out to mail a letter, he got lost. He asked a young boy where the post office was. And when the boy told him, Billy thanked him and said, "If you'll come to the Baptist church this evening, you can hear me telling everyone how to get to heaven." That's my closest I can get to Billy Graham. I don't have that one down yet. The boy said, "Well, I don't think I'll be there." "You don't even know your way to the post office." It's hard to know where to go sometimes. It's hard to know what to do, the decisions. It's tough. Especially when your family's involved. Especially when the decisions are about the family. Oh, man, is it hard. You know, some of us know what it's like. You stay up at night and your guts are turning, just wondering, what do I do? How do I get through this? Jacob's been living in the same place for some 20 years, and though it's been tough, he's actually made out quite well. By this point, in chapter 31, he's become quite a well-to-do man. He started with nothing, absolutely nothing, just the shirt on his back and the staff in his hand. That's about all that he had. And by this point, he's actually becoming quite a well-to-do man. But man, is it getting hard. And he's just not quite sure what to do. We pick it up in verse 1, Genesis 31. "Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he's acquired all this wealth.'" Now, what are they talking about? If you remember, last week we saw this contract that was worked out between Jacob and his uncle Laban. And the contract was for what kind of, Jacob's done paying for the wives. He wants to put away a little bit something for the future. He still doesn't own anything. And so they worked out this deal. Remember about, you'll get all the spotted goats. That's what we'll do. You raise the flocks and all the spotted goats will be yours. Well, and by golly, all the goats started making spotted babies. And as things progressed, we saw Jacob doing some different things to make all this stuff happen, we thought. And as it turned out, all the stuff that would end up going to Jacob got bigger and bigger and bigger. And he's doing quite well. Meanwhile, all the stuff that belonged to Laban is now getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so the brothers, Laban's sons, they're kind of ticked off at this. Verse 2, "And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban. And indeed, it was not favorable toward him as before." I mean, every time he'd go over to Laban's house for dinner, they just would have this scowl on his face. Things were fine as long as Jacob was poor and Laban was rich. But now that Jacob's becoming rich, it's just not so happy anymore. Verse 3, "Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. The Lord spoke to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers. If you're taking notes, this is what I wrote down about this verse. God's guiding through circumstances. God's guiding through circumstances. And as we go through this chapter, we're going to get little hints at how God got Jacob to move. What God used to get Jacob to move. God has decided that Jacob's been gone from home long enough. 20 years. It's time to get the kid back into the promised land that I'm supposed to give to him. And so God's going to cause some things to happen. And one of the things, beloved, that God is going to use at times in our life is the circumstances. For Jacob, it's the fact that things are going to turn a little sour between him and Laban and the rest of the family. Things aren't going so well. And God will use that in Jacob's life to make him uncomfortable enough to move. That's happened in my life. I was an assistant pastor at Calvary Chapel Anaheim for 8 wonderful years. And I have since learned that there's much to be desired about being an assistant pastor as opposed to being a senior pastor. Those of you who have this longing to be a senior pastor, a word of warning. It ain't so great. When you're an assistant pastor, things go wrong in the church, and the senior pastor always gets blamed. You know, I can goof up, but the senior pastor is the one that gets all the arrows. Everybody focuses everything on him, you know, and I didn't quite realize that. I didn't quite appreciate that when I had that. But I'd been an assistant there for 8 years. But I have known all along, since I was 18, that God had called me to be a senior pastor. And we just kind of started getting restless. And one of the things that God used was Mark took away one of my favorite things. I used to love leading worship at the midweek Bible study. And at one point, that Mark, that guy, he said, you know, I don't think I want you leading worship anymore. And I had been doing that for like 10, 12 years. I don't think I want you doing this anymore because actually he was going to change the format and he was going to cut the worship time way back because he wanted to do a through the Bible thing. And he was afraid I'd be hurt if I couldn't do my 20 songs that I normally would do on a midweek study, you know. And he only wanted to do like 5 songs. And boy, that hurt me. I was just so offended over that. And you know what God started doing with that is it began to make me uncomfortable and realize, you know what, it is time to go. But don't you misunderstand me. I love Mark to pieces. We are as close as 2 bugs and a rug. We love each other. I support him 100%. He's an awesome pastor, wonderful pastor. But that incident was one of the things that got the ball rolling that made me realize, well, I was too comfortable. I was too comfortable. Now, circumstances don't always have to be negative to get us moving. Sometimes it's a positive thing. Sometimes there's a good thing that gets us moving. With Drew, God has opened this wonderful opportunity for him in Russia. And by golly, it's just like, I mean, you'd have to be thick-headed not to go through this. This thing is just so perfect. It's so such a good opportunity. So God can use circumstances. God can use circumstances to guide you and me. Verse 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. Now he wants to talk this over with his wives. He doesn't seem to want to talk to them at the homestead. They've got this tent city they've been developing, you know, and everybody's got their own separate tents, and it's quite a deal, and they've got servants and kids coming out of the ears, and Jacob wants a little privacy to talk about this issue. He doesn't want to talk about this in front of everybody. He doesn't want word getting around what he's thinking. So they go out in the field where just the 3 of them can talk. Jacob seems to want to make sure that his family is on board with what he's thinking about doing. Verse 5, and he said to them, see, I see your father's countenance that it is not favorable toward me as before. but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Jacob was a hard worker. This guy's not a slacker. He's not moving. He doesn't want to move because he can't do his job. He's a hard worker. He says, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Now, last week, we saw this agreement we talked about between Laban and Jacob. And they decided these certain sheep are the ones that you're going to get. Well, now we find out that as soon as all the babies started being born that fit that, Laban wasn't too happy about that. So I don't think we like the spot anymore. No, you get the striped ones. And Jacob would go, well, okay. And that week, all the babies that were born would be the striped ones. And Jacob's going, whoa, this is really cool. And then Laban would say, I didn't mean striped. I meant the gray ones. Yeah, the gray ones. And then the next week, they'd all be gray. And so as Laban keeps changing, trying to keep Jacob from becoming so prosperous, God kept up with him all along the way. Last week, we saw this goofy thing that Jacob was doing with sticks and stripes and all this kind of stuff, you know, and we're kind of wondering, what, did he invent genetic engineering or something? How did he do all that? No. Jacob might have thought he was doing something, but now we see that he's realized all along it was just God. It was Jacob's hard work and God behind him. Jacob was not a slacker. He was a hard worker. He was a man you could count on. He was dependable. He took care of his flock, and God took care of the rest. Verse 10, and it happened at the time when the flocks conceived, Jacob is saying to his wives, that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, maybe even a second dream here, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Mentions that he's the God of Bethel. This is back in chapter 28, if you want to look this up and find out what that story was all about. But God says, look, I'm the guy that spoke to you 20 years ago, and I've watched out for you, and now it's time to go. If you're taking notes at this point, this is what I wrote down at this point. God's guiding through his word. God's guiding through his word. God not only uses the changes in Laban to move Jacob, but God also has spoken to Jacob. And now, in one or two dreams, in a couple of dreams, God has spoken. God's reminded Jacob of their previous encounter at Bethel. God told Jacob that he's seen everything that's happened to him. And God has said, it's time to go. Now, for Jacob, it was a dream that God used. Yet I find that in a practical basis, in a very real life, day-to-day basis, how God speaks to me is this book, is being in the Word. Psalm 119, verse 105. Your Word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. God uses this book to guide us. God uses His Word. Those of you who've been around me for a while, you know that I'm sold on this. I'm absolutely convinced, personally, that every Christian ought to be in this book every day. Not because that's what makes you a Christian, but it's just for your own good. You know, I don't know if your mother taught you to take your vitamins every morning. You know, but you know, there are things that are just good to do. They're just good to do. You can get along fine without taking your vitamins, you know. But when you get a cold, don't come to me and cry about it, you know. There are things that are so important to do. And beloved, being in the Word every day is one of those things. And I don't mean just reading your own favorite passages. Well, like, what should I read today? Well, let's see. Should it be this thing, or this thing? I've only got three places I've ever read, you know. No, don't do that. That's where you open yourself to the place where you're going to start making God say what you want Him to say. No. Organize yourself and read through the book. I think it would be really cool if you learned to read through the whole Bible, because there's so much in the whole Bible. That might seem a little overwhelming for some of you. Maybe you might want to just start reading through the New Testament first. Just do a chapter a day. Just a chapter. That's all we ask. Just a chapter a day. And you will find God speaking to you. Now, some of you, well, I've tried that, and I just can't do that. You know what? You got to learn how to stand up on your own two feet. It's like the baby says, well, I just can't walk. I can only crawl. No. At some point, you need to get up on your feet and walk. You need to be in the Word. You might think that just reading the Bible every day is a huge, horrendous thing. No. You haven't even started yet. That's just the beginning. You've got to get past the daily thing. And when you get into the daily thing, you're going to hear God speak. I think God will speak to you in several ways. First, I think God will speak to you as you are reading, learning, and remembering the principles that you see in the Scripture. What do I mean by that? You're going to come across passages that will remind you that you need to be loving people. You need to love one another as Jesus loved you. You're going to read that and you're going to go, oh yeah, I remember when Rich was talking about that. Oh yeah, I remember. Need to think about that today. You're going to come across passages where it's going to remind you that I'm doing a wedding this afternoon, and I've decided my passage for them this afternoon is Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. That's going to be my message for these two lovebirds this afternoon. And what awesome things to learn to remember. I need to forgive each other. There's going to be times you're going to come across the principle of learning to be humble. I need to walk in humility every day. Pride goes before a fall. You know, you read the Pastor to Person that, you know, we did this week for the bulletin. You know, it's about learning humility. Oh, how I need to stay humble to be useful to God. Just the principles. You're going to see daily the principles that you need to follow. But secondly, as you read the Bible every day, I believe there are going to be times when you're going to think that God is speaking to you. You've been wondering about this situation that you're in, and you just don't know what to do. And as you're making your way through the book, there's a day when suddenly it's almost like it's supernaturally highlighted, and it comes out and it speaks out to you, and you go, wow, I think God's telling me it's going to be okay. You know, I've shared the stories about when we were first going to buy our house over on Laurelwood in Placentia. And I was freaked out at the payments and what we were getting ourselves into. And I just couldn't see doing this. And then I read my quiet time that day. We were in Deuteronomy. And God said, go up, take the land, go do it. And I was like, oh, okay. And you know what? It all worked out. I remember at Calvary Anaheim, we were trying to find a new place for the church to move. And we tried this place and it didn't work. We tried that place and it didn't work. And we found a total dump. I mean, total dump. I mean, it was trash on the floor. It smelled like sewer pipes because there was. It was a sewer pipe. And I mean, it was total mess. All the electrical had been torn out. It was just total dump. And we got there. And that week, we were reading in Genesis where Isaac went from well to well trying to find a place to settle down. This one didn't work. That one didn't work. And the third place they called Rehoboth, broad places. And God said, this is it. And we felt God speak to us. And God, that's the place where Calvary Anaheim is right now. They're at Rehoboth. They're at the broad places. There are going to be times in your life where God's going to speak directly through His Word. There's times in my life, as pastor, I get freaked out at what I do, personally. There are times, you know, my wife sees the panic on my face most Saturday nights, you know, just like, are you ready? I'm not even close. You know, I there's parts where it scares me to death to think that I've got to stand up here in front of all you and have something to say. And some of you even think that God's going to say something through me to you. Oh man, that's a scary place. Last week, I was a day behind on my quiet time. If you're going to track this, I'll just confess this, you know. But last week, last Sunday morning, I was reading 1 Chronicles 29:1. And David says, "The work is great because the temple is not for man, but for the Lord God." And that, God spoke to me that morning. That, you know what? It's not about the people, as great and as wonderful as you are. But we are serving the Lord God. And what we do, what I do, what you do, we serve God. And God speaks through His Word. God wants to guide your life. You need to be in the Word. Get past that silly hump of the daily thing. Get into it. Get into it. Spend time in the Word every day. Verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered. He's telling them about these dreams and how God has spoken to him. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, "Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money." Now, remember Jacob worked for them for 14 years. That was the contract. He worked 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel. And then at the end, he really gave him Sarah. I mean, not Sarah, he gave him Leah. And then 7 more years to serve to get the real girl that he wanted, Rachel. And so he's worked for 14 years. We've talked about this is considered a dowry. And the concept, one of the concepts, the early concepts of a dowry, is that a husband pays the father some money for the girl. And the idea is this, is that you're supposed to take the money and stick it away in an IRA or something, you know, in an interest-bearing CD or something. And the idea is this, is that if the guy ever flakes out and leaves the family or he up and dies, then the woman has something to live on. That was one of the original early concepts of a dowry. Well, Jacob has worked for 14 years. And presumably there's been some good about him working. Where is that good come? Where's the profit gone? Well, you know what? He's just spent it all. He's burned through all of that money. And so they're saying, look, we can see it till our father doesn't have nothing for us. We're strangers. Verse 16. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. I like the way Rachel and Leah respond. Whatever God has said to you, do it. They encourage Jacob. You know what? If God has spoken this to you, then you need to do it. If you're taking notes, verse 16, God's guiding through counsel. God's guiding through counsel. Now, there are going to be times in your life when everybody says that you're going the wrong direction. And you think that this is what God wants you to do, and so you still got to do that. You follow me? There's going to be times where you just know with all your heart, I need to go this direction. Everybody say, no, don't do that, that's stupid. Well, you need to do what God wants you to do. But that's a rarity. Because most of the time, God will use the people around you and their counsel. Most of the time. You write down a few verses. Proverbs 11:14 says this. Proverbs 11:14, where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Great verse. Proverbs 15:22 says, without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Here's another one. Proverbs 24:6, for by wise counsel, you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Do you kind of get the point? Three times Solomon has jotted this down for his son to pay attention. Multitude of counselors, kid. Pay attention to what people are saying. Listen to wise counsel. Jacob is getting counsel from his family. He's asking his wife, what do you think? I kind of get the sense, because of the situation, he's pulled them out. I kind of get the sense that if they say, oh, no way, we're not leaving, that I don't think he'd leave. He wants to make sure that his family's with him, that they're on board with this thing. Counsel. Counsel. God guides us through counsel. Ask for advice. Look for confirmation from the folks that are important in your life. Verse 17, then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock, all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Now what's this household idols? The Hebrew word is teraphim, and it means like a little idol. It's just like, you know, like a little statue kind of a thing, you know. And usually, and some kind of something used in a household shrine, you know. And usually a female deity, and it's got to be small enough for her to carry. Sometimes made out of silver, sometimes made out of wood. Different things could be made up. What's the deal with this? One is that, the three ideas, often thought of as guaranteeing fertility. Now, I could see why Rachel is the one that stole them, right? Because she's the one that's having the problem with this, the fertility thing. That's one suggestion. Another possibility, and it could be all three of these. I wouldn't be surprised if it's all three of these. Number two is that they would be tied to Laban's estate when he died. There's archaeologists have found tablets that date back to this time where it's kind of like this is the will, this is the deed to the family farm. And so whoever, when Pop dies, whoever owns the teraphim owns the farm. And so, and this is probably one reason why Laban is going to chase them down to find these things, because he doesn't want Jacob getting the family farm. He's had enough of Jacob, you know. And so that's another idea. A third idea is that they may have been used for divination. It's like reading tea leaves, looking at somebody's palm, the goofy stuff, astrology, all that kind of stuff. All the kind of stuff that God forbids, but that's what these household idols would be about. And some have suggested, and I like this idea, that maybe Rachel was thinking, well, if I steal his household idols, he won't know how to find us. Because, you know, if he's used to looking into his crystal ball to find out where we are, and he doesn't have the crystal ball, hey, we're home free. So maybe that's what she's thinking. Could be. Did you notice that Jacob is raising his family in a pagan home? You're going to see the repercussions of this. You're going to see the messes that come on Jacob's family. He's not raising them as a godly family. He's raising them as total pagans. Verse 20, and Jacob stole away unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river. Most likely it's the Euphrates, because he's been up in northern Syria. Crossed the river, headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So he's going to be camping out in the northeastern area of Israel. And Laban, verse 22, was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Now, if you remember, you trivia nuts, back in chapter 30, verse 26, Laban had taken a portion of the flock already aside, and he put them 3 days' journey away. So that's where he's at, shearing the sheep. He's a three-day journey. So when Jacob gets up and leaves, some snitch has decided to tell Uncle Laban what's going on. It takes him 3 days to get there. That's the idea here about the third day. Then Laban took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. So it's now been 10 days since Jacob left, and he and Laban catches up. This is about a 300-mile journey. Laban does this in 7 days. That puts him at over 40 miles a day. He's really cooking in ancient days. I mean, the guy is burning rubber. He's probably burning oil too, thinking on the shape of his camels and horses and stuff. He's only got horses or camels. Jacob has got to take care of the kids, the family, the wives, all the goats, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Verse 24, he catches up. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban and his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp." Might have. The emphasis on might have. Probably not. Probably would have took a gun out and shot it or something if he could have. "And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.'" Now you might think, why couldn't he speak good to him? Well, the good would be, "Buddy, you come back and I'll double your wages." See, God doesn't want Jacob to stay. He doesn't want him to be... doesn't want to have a better contract. He wants no contract. God says it's time to go. So don't speak to him good or bad. Don't threaten him because, "Buddy, I know where you live." Okay. That's really cool when God says that for you, doesn't it? Isn't it? When God sticks up for you. That's very, very cool. Verse 30. "And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house." Now he understands you want to. He says, Jacob, I understand you just want to go home. "But why did you steal my gods?" Now, Jacob's not going to answer that question immediately. He's going to answer, why did you go without saying goodbye? And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. And with whomever you find your gods, do not let him live in the presence of our brethren. Identify what I have of yours and take it with you." For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So he says this kind of foolish thing. "You can kill whoever has it. You know, I don't care because I don't have it." He didn't realize that Rachel's got it. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents. But he did not find them. Then he went in out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. You notice they're all living in separate tents, you know. Verse 34. "Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, 'Oh, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me.'" And she says, I'm in my period right now, you know. And he searched, but did not find the household idols. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren that they may judge between us both." Jacob thinks Laban's made the whole story up. He thinks he's just made it all up. And so he's angry with them. He's so frustrated. What's ironic is that Laban didn't make that part up. Here's Jacob. Totally ticked off. You know, gang, before you get ticked off at people, you need to understand you may be wrong. You may not see the whole picture. Verse 38, "These 20 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night." In other words, Jacob has bent over backwards for this boss. When there was a loss in the company, Jacob paid for it out of his own pocket. I mean, he's done everything to serve Laban. "There I was in the day of the drought, In the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been with your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, or the God that Isaac fears, unless he had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Now, at this point, Laban feels a little foolish, and they decide to make a covenant. They make an agreement to officially terminate Jacob's contract. They commemorate this thing by, we're not going to read the rest of the chapter, just a verse or two. They set up a pillar as a way of reminding each other of what they've done. They put a heap of stones around it. They call this pillar the heap of witnesses. These things have witnessed what we're doing here today. They also call it, verse 49, Mizpah. Mizpah means watchtower, Mitzpah. And they also call it Mizpah because he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. Now, this is an interesting little line. Some people like to put this inscribed in little bracelets and stuff and hang it around the neck. Oh, the Lord watch between me and thee while we are apart, you know. And, you know, they might do that, you know, for you and Laura. You know, the Lord watch between me and you while we're apart. She's in Oregon. You're down here, you know, something like that. Oh, so romantic. No. Don't use this verse. Bad verse, because the context of this verse is, may God keep his eye on you, you dirty, rotten, sneaking thief. Because I know I turned my back on you for 1 second and you're going to come back and rip me off. And so may God keep his eye on you. You do anything wrong to my girls and buddy, may God watch out. That's the context. So don't use this for those little pretty things like that. You know, if you use that with me, buddy, I'm going to have you. Okay. At this point, Jacob performs a sacrifice. They all sit down to a meal. Then Laban kisses the daughters and the grandkids goodbye. And it's the last we see of Uncle Laban. One last thing before we take communion. Verse 42. I just want to bring one last point out. Jacob says, unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. If you're writing notes, one last thing to jot down. Handling a tough workplace. There's a lesson here. Handling a tough workplace. Jacob has been realizing how much God has been taking care of him all along. God's been watching out. In fact, it's neat. He says, God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you. Laban got rebuked because God saw Jacob's affliction and God saw that Jacob was working hard. He wasn't a slacker. He wasn't, well, he's going to, I've got a mean boss. I'll take a 2-hour lunch. No. Jacob was a hard worker. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18. This is where we'll end this morning. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18. Back of your Bible. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18. Peter writes this, servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable if, because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. In other words, you get brownie points in heaven with God if you're doing the right thing and you get treated wrongly. God sees it. Just like God saw Jacob's affliction, God sees you. God sees what they're doing to you. He says, verse 20, for what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently, but when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. In other words, you don't get brownie points if you're just a bad worker, if you're just a jerk, if you're just a lazy bum, and the boss fires you, well, you don't get any brownie points for that. Don't forget. Don't. Yeah, you're barking up the wrong tree. That's not what this is about. But if you're doing what's good, you're being the best employee you can be, and you get a harsh treatment, well, you get, God says, good job. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Those of you who've been on our Thursday night study, this means a lot here. Who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. See, we've been through walking with Jesus through his arrest, his scourging, his trials, his crucifixion. This is the way Jesus acted. He says, but he committed himself to him who judges righteously. That's what Jacob's doing. He's committing himself to God. He realizes God sees what's going on, and God's going to take care of me. If you're treated harshly at work, you can know that God will take care of you. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be a time to move on. Jacob moved on. He got to the point where he realized it's time to go. But keep in mind, it took him 20 years. It wasn't just a week on the job and it was tough and he quit. He worked for 20 years. He got his 20-year pin. God took care of Jacob. God even took Laban aside and warned him to leave Jacob alone. You do a good job at work, God will take care of you. God will lead you. There's a story I told us on Thursday night a couple weeks back. There's a story about a famous organist who was going to give a big recital at an East Coast church. And organ recital. This instrument, this pipe organ, did not have an electric motor. It required a hand pump. So they had to hire somebody. They hired a young boy to pump the air for the organ recital. And so everything's going along just fine until the lad put his head around the side of the organ and he whispered, "We're doing pretty good, aren't we?" "What do you mean by we?" objected the organist. A few minutes later, in the middle of a beautiful strain, the organ suddenly stopped giving out any music. Desperately, the organist tries all the different stops and pedals and everything. No use. And just then, he sees the little head of the little boy bob around the corner, big smile on his face, and he said, "Now do you know what I mean by we?" You know, sometimes we don't exactly give God all the credit we should for what he does in our life. And very often, he's like that little boy who really keeps us going, who supplies the strength, the power, all that we need. Oh, how we need him. We can commit ourselves to him. You can trust him. He knows what's going on. Commit yourself to him.